Welcome to Notcast, episode 366, The Glue Factory. I lived, bitch. I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzzwolf.
And I'm Shiva.
And I lived. Nightmare Nights is over and done and complete.
The Fennec that lived.
Yes. My goodness gracious, it is nice to have that weight off my shoulders.
It's the pony who died and the Fennec who lived. Yep. This two-part Doctor Who episode.
Yeah, this last weekend was the fifth and final Nightmare Nights. We're going to go into a bit of a con report, so hold on to your butts, right? It actually went really smoothly, all things considered.
Hold on to your kitty marks.
So we had really, really good pre-reg numbers and had a lot of money on hand before the weekend started. Then our at-door sucked major donkey balls. But it's okay, because we had announced that it was our last year and that we had Lauren Faust, that everybody bought early and bought big. So that's really good. We broke even, a little bit better than that actually, barring like something massively unforeseen coming from the hotel. And we raised $34,000 from on the convention side for charity for St. Jude's. And then our auctioneer guy, Jason Knight, matches our charity funds 10-1, so that's a further $3,400 for charity, which means a total of $37,400.
Wow.
For kids with cancer. So that's really cool. Even cooler is that's more than BronyCon did this year, and they're five times our size.
So what were your prior year's numbers like? I mean, what's your grand total raise for St. Jude's?
Oh, God. It's over 90,000 at this point.
Yeah, because I noticed on your website you had said something like, it was over 60,000 to date, and that was before this year.
Yeah, I'd have to go through our records and our donation stuff to find out exactly how much, but we were, like, tickling 100,000, but yeah, not quite, I don't think. Because, like, last year was about 15 grand, I think, and then this year was 37.
Yeah, I knew this year was, like, more than you'd ever raised in a single year before.
It almost broke the record of like 40,000, which was at a convention where someone literally dropped 20 grand on like some crazy item that had been signed by like literally everybody or something. That was like Evergreen Northwest a few years ago. The convention itself went very well. Friday was a massive, massive day. Everybody showed up. Like the vendors were all super happy. All the guests showed up and were having a good time. Lauren was there, signed her autographs. There was a big long line. We kind of kept the spaghetti to a minimum so that people weren't weird with her. It was a nice smooth day, pretty much. Saturday rolls around, and that was the day we had big concerns, because we only had an hour slated for autograph sessions, and even though we limited people to a single autograph from Lauren to make sure that everybody got as many as we could, we knew that we were going to run out of time. I'm kind of freaking out, because I'm like, look, people are going to be super mad, we're going to get shredded on social media, I'm gonna get yelled at in person, someone might punch me, that would suck. Thankfully, and this is like major props to Lauren, she's like, no, I'm gonna stick it out, I'm gonna make sure that everybody in the line right now gets their autograph. And she shared an anecdote, which she'd shared with a couple other people as well, to, you know, for verification purposes, that at BronyCon one year, she was similarly signing for folks, and the con hard capped the line. So there was people that didn't get their autograph, even though they'd been standing in line for a significant period of time. And she received, after the fact, a letter basically from a fan who was just incredibly hurt and just was like, I traveled super far to get your autograph and meet you, and I couldn't, and I can't even consume this content anymore, I'm just that hurt. And I'm like, I can understand that to a degree. It's a bit overdramatic, but it totally happens. So she was like, I couldn't let that happen. And she made sure that everybody got her autograph that was in line. And there were people like, me and my family drove 8 hours to meet you, Miss Faust, and all this other stuff. So she saved our ass big time. And she was super gracious. Lauren Faust was an amazingly good guest to have this year. She's really nice, first of all. And like, even though like dealing with her agency wasn't fun, she on site was super good. You know, they went to Fogo to show and all this other stuff. And I finally got to say hi to her, like, Saturday night. I'd been busting my ass, working, making sure things weren't on fire. So I hadn't actually said anything more than, that's Lauren. Because I was busy, man. Shit to do. But I got a chance to meet her. And I got to help this little girl have a really good experience. So Dean and Mary were there, my bosses at Akon, and they had their daughter Kimmy along for the ride because, well, what else are they going to do with it, right? They wanted to meet Lauren to say hello and give her their cards for Akon and whatnot. Because Kimmy was there, she'd made a little friend that she knew from last year, and Kimmy was getting to come in, and her little friend, like, she was like, oh, can I come as well? Because she was kind of, like, she'd be, like, the last person waiting outside. No, no, come on in. You know, it's cool. And they did the introductions, and this little girl was just so utterly starstruck, and she was like, oh, Mrs. Faust, it is such an honor to meet you. I love your stuff. I've been watching it my entire life, and your art and your sketches are so inspirational for me. I love your work on DC's Superhero Girls, and yada, and she just had this whole spiel, and she was very articulate for being, like, 9 or whatever, and everyone's just kind of, like, tearing up, because this is the kind of shit you want. This is the actual target demographic getting to meet an idol of hers, and just, like, one-on-one, shake her hand, and just, like,
this is something she's gonna remember.
Yeah, she's gonna remember this for the rest of her fucking life, and that's super cool. And, like, after Lauren filtered off to go to the next thing she was doing, she just ran up and gave me this huge old hug, like, thank you so much! Thank you so much, Mr. Sandy, this is amazing! And she ran off with Kimmy to go on, continue having fun. But it was really nice that, like, this girl was just so utterly starstruck and super thankful, mm-hmm. and got to meet her idol in a nice, you know, quiet way.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it really made everybody, like, all kind of tear up.
Mm-hmm.
That went really well. Sunday was really nice, too. Our charity auction was super cool, too. So we had this book called Project Harmonize, which this one artist had spent 2 years getting sketches into it, and the very final page was getting an illustration by Lauren in it.
Mm-hmm.
She'd poured her heart and fucking soul into this and guarded it fiercely and made sure that everybody got it back to her and all this other bullshit, and she really didn't want to let it go. But she was like, this is for charity, this is for Nightmare Nights. During the auction, it's just going up and up and up and up. The final bid for it was $6,000.
Wow.
For this 70-page sketchbook done by, like, 65 different artists. And then the person who won the auction turned around and gave it back to her.
Aww.
Like, I'm tearing up here thinking about it because it was such an emotional moment. And the person that did it was actually one of my, like, one of my community guest guys, Full Papers. And so basically what had happened is that he and a bunch of his friends had gone in on it without her knowing.
Aww.
So she could have it back.
So
again,
she could have it back for all of the work that she did. That just,
all the feels.
Yeah, and my AV guys had, like, prepped all this fucking music on cue, so when, like, shit, like, they could heighten the tension, and they really did a fantastic job.
Oh, wow,
like,
I didn't know that. Usually, charity auctions,
they had just shit on cue, like, rising tension, and, like, drama, you know, it's like, they had music bed for everything.
Now you have to release a Nightmare Nights soundtrack.
Well, I think that the charity auction was recorded, but that was a super cool moment that I was super happy to see. There was other stuff, too, like you mentioned.
Fetch Beer Fetches made this massive stained glass thing of Princess Luna, and he'd been doing, like, a bunch of stained glass stuff, like, a couple years ago, and last year he donated that to the charity auction. That went for $1,100.
Yeah.
And as soon as we found out, we were like, I texted Tieran, because Tieran was curious what
his friend's
stuff did. And he retweeted it as well, like, holy shit, dude, that's awesome. And I was really happy. I had a still sealed inbox Comic-Con exclusive Derpy from 2012, which I think was the first...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the first Comic-Con exclusive of this generation of ponies, and it went for $250.
Yeah,
I paid $40 for it, and Kit Silver, Kyle's husband, he was one that got it for me. Like, they did Comic-Con as part of Sofa Wolf, and he'd gone and he picked up a couple of them and bailed it out to me. So you know, that I really appreciated that at the time, and I can't believe that was five fucking years ago.
I know, right?
Already. Yeah, that was 2012. Paid 40 and it earned back 250 for charity. And then later when I came by with the prints and I walked through the vendor room, I saw it there for 80. Someone was selling one.
Yeah.
So, like, I guess it's the spirit of the charity auction. Oh. I mean, sometimes people, charity auctions, like, you get caught up in it, but I think because it was the last one, and Lauren was there, and it really, everything was heightened, I think that's why you guys did so fucking amazing.
Oh, yeah. And then, like, on Sunday, so, Sunday, it was, like, was a little somber in a way, so people like, this is the last day of the last Nightmare Nights, and yeah. Like, alright, go out there and make it a good one. So, basically, what happened was, some dude had gotten had a little, like, cardboard sign on a stick, RIP Nightmare Nights 2013 to 2017, and someone was like, you should just set that there, like, on a road, like a road sign shrine, and see what happens. Over the course of the day, we had this little memorial shrine show up, as people were, like, leaving little cards or leaving little notes or leaving, like, fortune cookies. And, like, someone left an empty bottle of beer. Someone left an empty bottle of whiskey.
Someone left a fucking Catholic memorial candles.
Yeah. And then someone made some little, like, post-it note candles and put them on top. And basically, this goofy little sign that we're like, let's see what happens, turned into, like, a legit-ass memorial with, like, some little notes left behind.
I also mentioned there was a container there that people were putting money in.
Yes. So, like, somebody had left a couple bucks, and we're like, well, we don't want to just leave this sitting there, so we got a security dude to sit by it. So we got, like, one of those empty, like, cheesy poof barrels, right?
Mm-hmm.
And put a little sign, money put in here, we'll go to St. Jude. By the time that everything finished up, that was $306 plus some change.
That's mm-hmm. nice.
Randomly sitting, collecting money there.
Yeah, that's, we had a really security neat guy keeping on it, but there was another thing where, like, it's a praying Jesus kind of painting, or, like, print, and then, like, all the vendors signed the edges, and they posted it, and made sure, they're like, make sure you take this. I'm like, oh, I have the whole shrine in a box at my apartment right now. I'm gonna frame that. And then, like, one of the last things we did is we had a couple of last-minute items to, like, bump up our charity numbers. So this year we got these sweet banners, right?
Yeah.
We had the autograph room. We're like, all right, well, let's take the autograph room banner and then get everybody to sign it. And it went for like $800.
Wow.
For a little $10 banner that had everybody's autograph on it.
Yep.
The preceding the actual, like, closing ceremonies and the numbers bits, we also had this, like, appreciation panel. It's basically, like, people could come and tell their stories of how, you know, how the community has helped them in the last 5 years. How
it was a scritch and bitch without the bitch.
Yeah, it was just a scritch. There's no bitching allowed here, and we didn't, there was no bitching. But we had people telling their stories and saying, like, how thankful they were and how glad, and they're sad that it's how sad that it's ending, but they're glad they got to be here. And, you know, that little girl from earlier I talked about, she got to talk for a little bit and say, you know, it was super great. I got to meet Lauren Faust, and I'm never going to forget. There was one guy who was like, you know, I was really dark place, and I found this community, and I've had a home here at this con for the last few years, and I'm going to super miss it, but you guys have helped me get a lot better. And, you know, stories like that. And then, like, Borg got to tell his story of how he proposed to his girlfriend, got married to his girlfriend, and then conceived their child. No, and then, like, conceived their child, probably, at the convention. It was super cute because he was cosplaying as Shining Armor, and she was doing Chrysalis. Uh-huh. So they had this little black and white spotted onesie for their baby, their little 3-month-old. Because there's this comic.
I was just going to say that as a joke. They had a 3-month-old child, right? That means
yes.
That they conceived her at last Nightmare Nights. Nine
yes.
months plus 3 months.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not joking. And but what was funny is their cosplay was based on this comic that someone had done where basically Chrysalis shows up with a half pony, half changeling baby and drops it at Shining's doorstep, and it's a white changeling with black spots. Basically, she was Chrysalis, he was Shining Armor, and he was there, and their kid was their half changeling baby. It was super cute.
That's cool.
And so we had all sorts of good memories. We were talking, like, how, like, a couple of my dudes were like, how I befriended them like they were my rivals in certain regards, and I did the smart thing and just befriended them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, you're gonna be my friend now. And how
now
that
you
worked
work
out.
For me.
Yeah, actually. That's like my ops guy worked for BronyFest, the other local convention, and then for me. And then like how Dusty and I used to have, as I said on stage, our horn measuring contest. And I was like, no. So I reached out. And,
you're like, no, I'm an Earth Pony. Actually, so is he.
So is he. So, and like with Karen, my VIPR handler, she my queen of VIPR, one of the most trusted people in the fandom when it comes to guest relations, she used to be the con chair of EQLA, who came to work for me. So like I part of my legacy is reaching out and befriending people to come bring them into my fold and do the tasks I needed of them. And so like it was all very well, nice and ego strokey, which left everybody feeling pretty good at the end. And at the very, very end, we had a guy with a saxophone who played taps as people filed out. And you could have heard a fucking pin drop as people did that. And they were like, well, that's it. We're done. It's over. And then at that point, we wrapped things up, went to the Londoner, got drunk.
And in the words of the great recently Sir Billy Connolly, you said, the show's over. Fuck off.
Yeah. We did post the Ferris Bueller, it's over. Go home. Right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Ultimately, now that it's done, we went on a high note, we broke even, we raised a bunch of money for charity, and I don't ever have to deal with it again.
And so you did still, get to meet Lauren Faust.
And I got to meet Lauren Faust.
So still no regrets.
Oh.
I asked you a couple of days ago, it was probably too soon, so I'll ask you again.
No, I am never chairing a convention again, and I had a couple of moments where I was like, you know what? Maybe I just don't want to work conventions anymore after this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, I still have work to do with Fiesta and Akon, so no. I'm not going to be a chairman anymore. That's
too much
work.
Yeah.
At least on top of everything else.
Yeah. But 5 years, broke even, everybody's happy, the guests are super happy. And like Lauren flat out said, man, I'm really sad this is your last year because I've had such a good time, I would totally come back every year. Like, that's a fucking twist of the knife.
Yeah.
But she had such a good time. Everybody else did, too. Like, I received several thank you emails from the guests and, like, thank you notes on Twitter and all this other stuff. So, like, in the end, I received recognition and thanks.
And you had good year.
Yeah, we had a good year, and we can wrap it up with our reputation intact. And that's what matters, ultimately.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't burst into flames, we didn't, like, have catastrophic shrinkage, we didn't piss off any of the guests or anything like that.
You paid your bills.
We paid our bills, we're dropping money to charity, and we get to ride off into the sunset.
Flippity-clop, flippity-clop.
Yeah. Well, it was funny, there was a dude who had the coconuts, who was, like, who was following behind somebody.
Horse
yeah. And it is kind of funny, because couple of my staffers were like, well, what if we just, like, fly into town next year and, like, go to the Londoner and eat barbecue and hang out for a day or two? I'm like, all right. And, of course, a couple of the actual, like, guests who we've been bringing are like, yo, we totally pay our own way to come out and hang with you guys for a few days. And I'm like, maybe.
But it wouldn't be something advertised.
No. It would be literally, like, my staffers and a couple of the show dudes who have been guests, like, just showing up.
Mitch will come and sign all the coasters in the bar.
He's one of the people who said they would. Like, we'll see what happens around next year, but I'm still planning on, like, going up to the hotel in suit and, like, posting from the con account, where's everybody? Hashtag banned. So, that's my con report. That's 20 minutes of pony bullshit, but you know what?
It's
this
the
has
last
been
20 minutes.
So much. It has dominated so much of my life for the past 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad to have it done.
It's a huge weight when you shed something like that. It's like leaving a job or something else where there's this weird hole in your life where you know,
it's like, oh, I don't have to spend 20 hours a week answering emails and doing shit and all prepping for con and then literally working nonstop for the week on either side of the convention before and then the convention itself. Like, I was still doing convention bullshit today, going through my boxes and being like, alright, this is going to Akon, this is going to Fiesta, and this is going to the trash.
There's gotta be
Fiesta's getting a good chunk of shit from me, too. Because our at door was pretty bad. We actually shrunk a little bit, which sucks, but because people bought early, bought higher, we're totally fine. Basically, like, hey, it's like, hey, Storm, here's all the print cartridges of this, and then here's the cards, and here's a brand new print cleaner kit, and here's my hole punch, and here's this, and here's some lanyards. So, Fiesta's gonna work out pretty well in the deal here. They'll be fine. But yeah, I can enjoy things again.
You've had this pony-sized tumor removed from you.
Yeah. Well, I had Mario Odyssey waiting for me to get home, and I've been playing the hell out of that, and...
Oh, this is what life is like without a con.
And Panther and I sat down and watched, like, 4 or 5 episodes of Expanse yesterday, which I hadn't finished season 2, so this was nice to get back to it. Going back to normal-ass life, not worrying about, oh my god, this massive thing... It's gone. It's over. It's done. I still have to worry about the logistics of getting, like, a bunch of random shit that people gifted to Lauren back into her hands, including one horrific animatronic Nightmare Twilight Sparkle-looking thing. If you've been to, like, Walmart or Target, they're this giant animatronic, not quite an Ibo, but, like, responds to its touch and sound and has 90 phrases and songs and shit like that. So,
I wonder if the guy who wanted to marry Twilight has one.
I'm sure he does, and I don't want to know.
Ah, don't touch me now!
Light slide of the castle! Ah!
We could paint one of his Fluttershy for you, Fez.
No, I actually, I used the last year of Nightmare Nights having a charity auction as an opportunity to pare down some of my collection. So I donated Derpy, I donated the Comic-Con exclusive vinyl scratch in the light-up box. 3 art prints from Idis. And what else?
Your little miniature vinyl figurines.
Oh, yeah. So Wheel of Fine a few years ago made these really limited-run vinyl figurines. They're actually really cool. One is Future Twilight when she comes back from, like, a day in the future. She's wearing, like, this ripped... up suit. She has an eye patch and her hair is all fucked up and everything, and it's a really cool little statue. There's one of Trixie on her hind legs casting a spell, and her cape is like in flap kind of mode and everything. They were really neat, but like I washed them before I gave them to you to get all the dust off of them.
Yeah, because they've just been sitting there.
Because they've just been sitting on that shelf gathering dust.
It's always strange when you get into something, you get a lot of cool stuff, and it's like, and then a couple of years later, it's like, huh.
Why do I have this?
And I tweeted this. Tyrion retweeted it. But I was sitting there looking at the stuff that the shelf that some of the ponies were on, and I was like, I wonder how much of my pony stuff I should donate. And Tyrion, under his breath, says, all of it.
You didn't donate all of it, but
no,
still.
No, I didn't find all of it. I know that somewhere in the boxes in my closet I've got, like, a whole set of the McDonald's Happy Meal ponies that came out.
You started before you moved, right?
The shows, yeah, I guess so. Because we lived in our house 5 years, and Saverin got me into watching the show shortly after it started 7 years ago. So
some of this is pre-move.
I probably had very small amount pre-move, yeah. That told Tyrion, I was wandering around the vendor hall, and I just decided to spend $200 on this massive Fluttershy plush. And he's like, I know you did. I know you would not be that stupid. And I'm like, no, I'm not. But,
no, I got this Dakamakura instead.
Speaking of Fluttershy, I have this other little Fluttershy that's like this little... You know those ones that had the weird manes that were like the little felt strips.
The spaghetti mane ones?
Yeah, yeah, and they're kind of furry. I'm going to look and see what the age range is on it, because I don't want it to be a choking hazard, but I'm planning on bringing that to my niece for Christmas.
That works.
It's like a little soft toy she can cuddle. Provided that it doesn't say no children under three because they'll choke on our mane or something like that, you know. But I'm like, I've got this, I've got like two Fluttershy statues on my work desk. And then I've got this other one. This is this little soft, fuzzy one. And I'm like, I don't really need all of these Fluttershys.
Yeah, like, I have my shelf of pony, my little stand, like, multi-layer shelf of pony bullshit. Hasn't been dusted in a while. I didn't end up donating any of my personal shit, which, like, I am disappointed that I didn't get around to doing it, because I had some stuff set aside that didn't make it to the con. I had this one,
original... It always seems like cons, it's like, I'm gonna do this, and then you forget it at the last minute.
Yeah, well, I'm a little busy,
yeah,
so
just a titch.
Yeah. I'll probably, like, donate it to some other convention to just get it out, because I don't need it. I have my stuff that has all the memories attached, and then, like, I have just collector stuff, and then there's stuff that I'm like, why do I have this?
I mean, one of the things I know is really cool for you is I love your little paper ponies Bronyville that they made for you.
Those are literally a two-of-a-kind piece.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, like, never give that away. That's really nice, and it was really cool of them to do that.
Yeah.
They're nice folks.
They are, and it was one of those things where that's another person who we helped bring them into the pony scene.
Mm-hmm.
That's like helping Pixel Kitties get noticed and, like, a part in it. I'm not saying we were the tastemakers, but, like, it's always super nice to see the people that you helped early on make it a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the paper ponies, they refined their art super well and have made all these massive, awesome pieces, and, like, their exclusive for the con this year was this, like, Starry Night inspired Luna piece that, like, just is leaps and bounds better quality than the original Nightmare Nights Year 1 Nightmare Moon that I have from them.
Mm-hmm.
They've gotten so good in the intervening time, it's really impressive.
I hope they can parlay that into other fandoms and other characters.
Yeah. They go to, like, Comic-Cons and anime-cons and bullshit, so they make all sorts of stuff. They just carry the pony stuff at us.
Yeah.
And, like, the...
Because I think that style is super unique. Like, I've been in furry for years. I've never seen anything like what they do.
Mm-hmm. And, like, it was also cool, the guy that does the soccer jerseys, if you saw that guy, he was in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
They have, like, the cutie marks on the front. He's also working on doing, like, custom Fursona jerseys now. He was like, I wanted to see if I could do it, and I did. So I'm now taking commissions for one-of-a-kind jerseys with, like, your Fursona's face on it or whatever.
Ooh.
So that's cool. Like,
yeah,
it has...
Send me his info. All
right. And it has, like, the name, like, your character name on the back, and then your persona on the front, like a soccer jean.
That's nice. You know what? You should refer him to the FBA, the furry basketball.
Actually, thing. Yeah,
because they all have the sports characters, and, like, they're
that
all
would be
all their characters have all their backstory and personal history. Like, there's a lot of writing involved with that, and that would be a really cool opportunity.
He primarily does soccer jerseys, but I bet he could totally do some, like, basketball jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it went really well. The vendors were all very happy. There a couple of the vendors really threw out all the stops because holy shit, Lauren's gonna be here. Mm-hmm. There's this one artist that goes by, her name is Silpho online. She has this really cute style. She did a fucking oil painting of Lauren's OC pony and put it in the charity auction, and it went for like $3,500.
Wow.
Like, holy fuck.
Oh, I wanted to mention something that I thought was cool when you were talking about the Harmony book, and Lauren did the last sketch in it, and the sketch is of Alicorn Twilight.
Yes.
Queen Twilight.
Queen Twilight.
Which Lauren had never drawn before because she had left the show by the time Twilight got her wings. And apparently the original concept under Lauren's vision was Twilight would become Queen Twilight and be an Alicorn at the very end of the series.
Like, she would be Celestia's queen, Celestia's successor.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, that wasn't quite the case.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Hasbro was like, ah, no, queens are evils, then girls love princesses, it's Disney's fault.
Yeah, that's why Queen Chrysalis, but it's Princess Celestia and Luna.
Yeah. No joke. But yeah, that was her
first... It's actually
first,
a marketing decision.
That was her first time drawing that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, she... The last page is Queen Twilight.
Neat.
One-of-a-kind sketch.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Oh, man. In other news, Super Mario Odyssey is really good. I can enjoy that now.
Mm.
I've finished the second world without fighting the first boss of it. So, Super Mario Odyssey for the Switch is sort of... It's sort of open world.
Mm-hmm.
You're thrown into the world, and you're presented like, alright, there's missions. You need to do X, Y, and Z in the world to progress the story. But you also need to get a certain amount of moons, which are the stars, the shines, the MacGuffins to proceed
what?
To the next world.
Fuck that. Coins are nothing.
Well, there's also coins, and there's also the regional coins.
I'm sorry. I the last Mario game I played was... What was the one that came out for the Nintendo? Was it Mario World?
Mario, yes. Super Mario World.
Super Mario
was
World.
For
that's
the
last
SNES.
Mario game I played.
So, this one, you in each world, you've got to pick up, find the moons to power up your ship to go to the next one. And they're hidden just goddamn everywhere. And it's like just for looking around, or doing a jump puzzle, or... In certain cases, like in the New Donk City area, which is sort of this New York City type space, like there's a sad dude sitting on a bench.
New Badonka Donk City.
If you sit next to him, he's like, "Thanks, I really appreciate it," and he gives you a moon. There's another guy who's just kind of staring off in the distance, feeling sad. You tell him a joke, and he gives you a moon.
Does the guy open his trench coat like, "Hey man, I got moons"?
No. There's...
I didn't mean exposing himself. No. I meant there's like moons lining the inside of his coat.
Anyways, there's like two women with a jump rope. If you jump in and jump with it, like there's all sorts of little things you can
Shaggy,
do.
Shaggy, we're talking about the magic of friendship.
We're trying to find the moons and get around the world, and it's all just cute little things like that, and it's just such a fun game. And you can do the bare minimum, but one of the other things is there's world coins.
Mm-hmm.
Where there is an exact amount. If you get all of them, you can get all the little MacGuffins. Like, there's little decorations for your ship, there's stickers for the exterior ship, but the big deal is costumes.
Yeah, I've seen some of them.
So every world has at least one costume associated with it. So like the first world is like Caveman Mario. So you have like a caveman pelt suit and then a dinosaur like turtle skull hat, which also gives you like raggedy caveman head and beard, and you run around in that. Then the second world is the Sand Kingdom, which has both poncho and sombrero and cowboy outfit. There's Dr. Mario, there's Explorer Mario, there's Mario Paint Mario.
Oh, is there Raccoon Hat Mario?
I saw something floating around Twitter where you combine certain things, and the clown with the doctor was like, uh-oh, but the last one was like crown and fine dress, and that was like mattress salesman.
Yeah.
Oh, talk about the cute dog.
No, the costumes you can get.
And there's one with Mario wearing a crown, and he's in a nice suit, and the subtitle was like, TV mattress salesman.
Yeah, there's like... So all the costumes are purely
come down to Crazy Mario's Wet Mattress World. Super Mattress World.
Yeah.
Super Mario Mattress World.
One of the suits you can get in the New Donk City is a suit and fedora.
So and that suit with the crown.
Yeah. So basically you can mix and match, and like if you have 1,000 coins you can buy the boxer short Mario.
Is there a trilby called the Mario?
No. And you have to have a hat at all times, but you can totally run around with Mario's polka-dotted swimming trunks. And
cute.
His hairless Italian chest with his little bitty nips. Like, that's not Italian.
They're only 2 pixels wide.
And there's all these fun little things, like... If you bump into a cactus, needles are left in Mario's nose for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
It's just a super joyous, fun game that rewards you for fucking around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've had a ton of fun with it so far, and I'm only just now, like, mostly through the second world.
Mm-hmm.
The final boss of this world is this fucking, it's this floaty head thing, and he has two independent hands.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, these ice patches on the floor, and there's snow, and basically he's trying to hit you with his hands.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is when he slams it down, it stuns the hand. And you take over the hand, and you're piloting this fist, and this giant stone face is like, oh shit, no, and you punch him in the fucking face three times.
So it's kind of like, stop hitting yourself.
Literally, you take over the hand, and his fist, and he has this like, no, and he tries to block it with his other hand, punch him in the face. And you have to do it three times, and you beat him, just like most Mario bosses. But it was just this hilarious moment of, like, you take over his own hand and punch him in the face with it.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's a really fun little game, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, Sarah's been playing it, too.
And it's like, I got that, and then after Mario, I'll kill some Nazis.
Mm-hmm. Has that game dropped yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, it came out.
Siam's been playing that one.
Yeah, so Mario, Wolfenstein 2, and like the new Assassin's Creed all dropped same day.
Oh, fuck.
So, like, three major...
Which one do I play first, if you're, like, in the games?
Yeah. Mario. And so, then Wolfenstein, because basically, day one, it's going to be a little buggy. Give them a couple days to patch it, you know? But it's apparently real good, and has a lot of social commentary about complicity and shit like that.
I saw an interview with the lady that plays like the black character who has like a cool afro and everything, and she was totally talking about, oh hell yeah, it's like it's got some social justice elements in it,
because like a lot of it is the complicity of white Americans. Like I watched the quick look that Giant Bomb did, where like they're talking about it and they spend a little time talking and like just hanging out, like, oh, there's motherfuckers in KKK robes, and the Germans are giving them shit about, man, your German sucks, you better fucking get to it. And then there was one woman, like, sucking up to one of the officers, and she runs her mouth, and she's basically like, oh, I'm gonna be such a good new German citizen, and then she, like, says something about how Austrian music is not as good as German, and she's like, and the guy's like, oh, well, our Führer is German, our Führer is Austrian, and you are now on the list. And she's like, oh no, because she was trying to suck up to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, a little bit further out, some old white lady's talking about how, like, oh, you should come to the cookout on Sunday, I'm going to be auctioning off some lovely slaves, indicating that once, you know, Germany took over, they reinstated slavery in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is some real dark shit, and it's all like,
yeah,
you know, people take benefit from it. And then there was the milkshake Nazi scene.
Milkshake Nazi?
Yeah, it was one of the things... Everybody loves milkshake duck, you know, that joke, right? Uh-huh,
yeah.
So it was a scene in a diner in Roswell, New Mexico, where you are there, and they don't explain what you're doing at first, and you're in a fucking... You're dressed up as a firefighter, and you have a mask over, and this Nazi comes in, orders a milkshake, and is... You know, being this smarmy fucker, and basically, he's like, ah, milkshakes, I love them, they're my favorite American thing. Mm-hmm. The rest of this will have to be more German. And then he kind of looks at you and realizes, oh shit, you're BJ Blazkowicz, and your guy pulls out a fucking, like, axe and just in his fucking neck. And everyone's like, oh! I mean, and in the game, the guy at the diner just is like, reaches out his pop, pulls out a gun and just caps the Nazi. He's like, God, you let him talk way too long. Let's get to the fucking thing. And so, there's a lot of real good Nazi killing.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild from what I've seen, and I've heard nothing but good things about it. Everyone's talking about it in real glowing terms. Mm-hmm. Like, I still haven't finished the first game. Like, I have it. I just haven't finished beating it. I've seen a playthrough.
That's like 2012 or something.
Yeah. And it's all set in Western Europe.
Mm.
But... Now it's in America and realizing shit's bad here too. So
in the first game, or the last game that took place in Western Europe, was that still an alt history Nazis won?
Yeah.
And this is just an extension of that into America. Yeah.
Basically, the main story, the opening of the first new Wolfenstein game, New Order, basically starts with BJ getting real fucked up and being in a coma for like 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wakes the fuck up, realizes, oh shit, the Nazis won, and then begins tearing ass across Western Europe and trying to hook up with what little remains of the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the New Order, you've dinged him a little, but you're not like, ah, world revolution to fight the Nazi war machine.
Mm-hmm.
You've won a victory, and then the next game picks up immediately thereafter. And it's actually implied at the end of the New Order that your guy, the main character, is fucking dead. When, no, he's not, but he's real fucked up. And they actually show this mechanically by his health being maxed at 50, as opposed to 100.
Oh.
For a good chunk of the game. It's a good time to play some video games about killing motherfucking Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, in general. Axing them questions. Video games, man.
Yep.
I can enjoy them again. So, now that I've talked for a lot about video games and bullshit, what have you guys been up to? Because I don't want to be, like, completely dominating the episode.
I haven't been up to much, really. Just regular life. We're starting to, I guess, starting to prep for MFF, which is the first weekend in December, the weekend after Thanksgiving. So we're going to have to start doing all of our book layouts and everything for all the stuff that's coming out for that. Yeah, I'm not going to it. I haven't been to MFF since like 2010, I think.
Usually you have problems having enough PTO by this time of year.
Oh, yeah. And
with
I never,
all the other cons.
Yeah, and I never have PTO at this point in the year, which is fine. But there's still plenty of work I got to do, even though I'm not going to be at the con. There's books that need laying out and, you know, prep.
For Planet still has to.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I got to register the people that are going to be going, that are going to be working at table and stuff like that. So,
when does their pre-reg close? Soon?
It's got to be soon. They were tweeting yesterday about having people pre-reg. So I'm assuming that they're probably in the final run-up to doing it. It's going to be interesting to see how this year goes, because they've got basically the hotel the MFF is always at is attached by a walkways to a convention center, and they actually have space in a convention center this year. It's the first time they've done that. So the dealer's room is going to be in the convention center, much like Anthrocon's. So it's like the way their dealer's room has been for the last few years is the like entire bottom floor of their section of the hotel is all dealing space. There's like a one big room and then four or five ancillary smaller rooms. So it's all kind of spread out. But this year it's all going to be in one big room in the convention center, which would be kind of cool. So it'll be neat to see what happens. I also keep an eye on like convention attendance numbers and stuff like that, because I'm interested in that, but I also look at it from a business perspective. So AC and MFF are only like 300-400 people apart at this point after Anthrocon.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see if MFF has another big attendance increase, because MFF is looking like they may surpass Anthrocon for the first time.
That'd be cool.
And Anthrocon's always been the largest furry convention since it's been around, I think.
That's maybe pretty not damn early impressive. Years.
So, yeah. So, I mean, both of our two biggest cons are over 7,000 people now. This fandom's just really exploding. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens with sales there this year. So I'm excited about that. And we've had a couple of other good publishing things happen lately, too. I don't know if I mentioned Ursula Vernon's new book that she just finished recently on the podcast. Do you remember if I did?
I don't remember if it was what's the name of it?
The Clockwork Boys.
No, I don't think you mentioned that.
So she wrote this book that had been like percolating in the back of her head as an outline for like 10 years or something, and she just finished it recently, and it was a good deal bigger than her normal books, so she And then our editor was like, why don't you split it into two books? And she's like, I could do that. So it's a two-book series. The first one's going to come out later this month. And the second one is going to come out spring 2018. And, of course, we were already doing print editions of some of her books. So I contacted her and said, you know, can we do the print edition of this book? So basically now we're going to have two brand new books by Ursula Vernon that have never been released before.
Oh, cool.
She'll release the ebooks, and we'll release the print books at the same time. I think what we're going to actually do is do a hardcover release at first, and then when the sequel is released, we'll put the first one out in paperback form. But it's like, it's going to really appeal to people that have played tabletop role-playing games. Because it's like, every time your paladin has done this stupid fucking thing or whatever, and then like, it's that kind of party kind of book, mm-hmm. you know? So it should be fun. It should be very adventurous and very funny also. So that's a big one I'm looking forward to, and promoting that and everything. But like I said, we don't have an exact date on that. That'll be out this month. And then, God, we got to prep for Black Friday at the end of the month, too, through Cyber Monday. So, of course, we'll do a big sale for that and everything as well. And we're also releasing a new Kyle Gold book that should be coming out at MFF. And that's called Camouflage. And it's got the cover and interior illustrations by Rukas, who's a frequent collaborator of his. And this was originally released in chapters on his Patreon. And now it's gone through and edited it all up and everything. And that's coming out as one full book. And it's a pretty good sized book. It's like 104 or 140,000 words. I can't remember.
That's a lot of words.
Exactly, but yeah, it's a pretty good book. It's a one-shot. It takes place in the Devin Lee universe, but it's not like directly connected to any of those characters. The main character is Dev's cousin, but the Devin Lee characters are not in it or anything like that, but their influence is kind of felt in it. And I read that earlier this year before he'd done like the final passes on it and everything. It was really good. So yeah, we'll have other new books. I know we got a couple of art book projects going on. Yeah, the usual. Follow our website and our Twitter, you know, furplanet.com.
Yeah. Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. I love that joke about a werewolf YouTube channel. Like and subscribe.
Oh.
So that's really all I've been doing is what I always do, day job and for planet stuff. And the last con we did was Furry Invasion, and we talked about that, and that went well. Yep, then we'll have MFF, and then, oh God, 2018, and a whole new year of conventions.
Yeah, we're almost done with this hellscape of a year, but the thing is, our dark future timeline continues on.
Mm.
It's November already.
How is it already November?
Because we're old and our brains kind of like skim over the year and stuff that doesn't matter how it works. I was super sad the Six Flags doesn't reopen until the 17th because I was gonna be like, I'm gonna go get some more motherfucking brisket fries. Ah! But I can't go do that until 17th. But I will totally do that because that's Holiday in the Park, bitches. Hey, I did get to go to Fright Fest and it went really well because, I mean, shit, we haven't recorded since then.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go after some misadventures. I enjoyed the park. I didn't ride any rides that day. I just wandered around, enjoyed the ambiance, got a fucking funnel cake, got some brisket fries. And as I was just kind of wandering around, I was near the front entrance, and the lady was like, yo, I'm heading out. Have you been to any of the haunted houses? And I'm like, not yet. And she's like, okay, here you go. She had pretty small hands and had slipped her wristband off and gave it to me, which I then slipped on and went into like 3 of the 5 haunted houses on the park.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. Yeah, that went well.
Cool.
It was fun times. Shiva, anything exciting for you?
Well, I've been reading a lot since while I was on hiatus, and that's like my major time sink during the week.
Mm.
Haven't really been touching any video games. Been enjoying some time away from the computer.
Mm.
So I've read a bunch of books. I've smoking hookah. Well, I read a lot of books most evenings.
Mm-hmm.
I did So we had discovered that my company really likes Halloween, and people, because it's a tech company, are full of nerds and also really like Halloween. Mm-hmm. So they threw a party get together on Halloween, I got, so Monday night, it's like, man, I really want to bring something in. Well, I just bought a bunch of apples. I think I've got some whipping cream in the fridge, and I just bought 5 pounds of sugar. What the hell? I'll make candied apples, you know, caramel apples from scratch. I've made caramel once before.
Oh.
I think I could do it again. It was a different style of caramel, but still the same theory applies.
Right.
And so I went home on Monday night and made caramel for the first time. Like, actual, like, chewy caramel versus, like, the hard, crispy toffee kind, which is what I'd made before. And made caramel apples and discovered I really like making caramel. So that was fun. And surprisingly easy, but requires a lot of patience, and you can't walk away because it'll burn and then you're fucked. Let's see, what else? I had like a couple things and then they just went out of my head. We're working on Fiesta stuff.
Yep,
we're actually,
that's only, what, 4 months away?
It's February, mid-February.
Fuck.
Yeah. It's like 13 weeks and some odd days or something like that, so.
Good thing I don't have to worry nearly as much for that one.
Yeah. Mm.
That's your job.
Yeah. So, been working
Sable
on the soap.
Job.
Yeah. Been working on the soap design for this year. Almost got that. I've got the it finalized now, so now it's time to, like, start making all the master molds, and then we'll start making actual soap, you know, for this year.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a lot of fiddly and, you know, correct and fix and then bake and then sand and, you know, clean it all up once it's out of the oven. So that's pretty much done. So we're on to that project. And then I think we're going to be making over 3,000 little soaps this year. That's a lot of soap.
Wow, it just keeps growing.
Yep. I don't know how much longer we can actually, like, maintain this kind of volume. That's a lot of soap.
Yeah. Maybe you could outsource that. I mean,
every time we priced it, it was unreasonable. We could only do it for super sponsors if we did it.
Oh.
Yeah, the price point's that high for custom soap.
Mm.
So it just takes a lot of our time doing it. Let's see. Other than that, it's like prep for Halloween, prep for Thanksgiving. Next weekend, we're having a big get-together of a whole bunch of people we play WoW with. They're coming into town, so we've been planning that party. That's turning into a rather big shindig. Fun, because I like spending time with these people. These people are pretty much the only reason I'm still playing WoW as regularly as I do. It's because I like spending time with these fuckers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, a lot of it's just been, rating's fun, but I spend it 3 or 4 nights a week, depending on how, evenings a week, a couple hours a night. That takes up a big chunk of time, so when we go on hiatus like we are now, it's like, I can, like, have a life and do other things. And there's been some employment strife in the household, like, the last week, because mm-hmm. Siam and our roommate Vash both work for the same company, and mm-hmm. their team got dissolved, like, this past week, and it was done in a very abrupt and unpleasant way.
Mm.
And so instead of doing what they've been doing for, like, the last 3-4 years, they're now just going to be back on the phones taking plain old, I can't connect.
Frontline calls,
mm. just my internet won't connect, you know, just back to being plain old, like, Fios technicians, or not Fios. Fios is what we have. I don't know. I can't remember what their product is.
That's bullshit. You work at a company that long, work your way to get off the phone, and then they put you back on?
Yeah,
that's
so
bullshit.
There's been some scrabbling in the household to start job hunting on both their parts, because neither one wants to be a frontline technician anymore.
No.
So we're going through the major overhaul in job hunting right now for both of them, and... Mm-hmm. It's just been a very unhappy week, because the combination of getting moved back onto the phones, but it's been done in such a asshole-ish, unkind way, like their company usually is, that, you know, it just emotionally, it's been a very awful week for them. Mm-hmm. And of course, two people out of the house are unhappy, and that means that everybody's feeling very pissed and, mm-hmm. you know, stressed. I mean, they didn't lose their job, so at least there's that. But that doesn't make the situation a happy one.
Mm-hmm.
So one or both of them are probably going to be, you know, changing employment in the next little while, and it's just not good. So we're going to, yeah. we have to start looking about, okay, well, how do we juggle cars, and are we going to have to go buy a third car because we are down to two, because Sam's been working from home for like the last 4 years. So all of the crazy juggling that's going on with that, and that's been a lot of the past, like, week has been that.
Mm.
Plus, they got told, so a week ago Tuesday, they basically got told that a big change is coming. It was phrased very ominously. So from Tuesday to when they all went into the office on Friday to be told what the big news is, you know, they were worried that they're going to lose their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, obviously something major is happening. So there was all last week was, oh shit, what's happening? Then Friday rolls around, it's like, oh fuck.
This is bad. It could be worse, but it's still bad.
And then all week's been same old of what bullshit is coming down the pipe today.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's not been a fun week.
I don't know if it would almost be better to just lose your job, because he's worked there for so long, he'd probably have, like, a couple months of severance, at least.
Severance is purely optional. Mm. And there was some rumors about that happening, and then they decided against it, and they're just going to make people miserable.
That's some bullshit.
So we'll see how that pans out.
Mm.
That's been the major points in, like, my weeks. It's been, you know, fiesta. Enjoying my weeks free of just enjoying smoking hookah and reading books.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh god, job and stress from there.
Mm. Yeah, Panther's been having to do a lot of really early, early bullshit changes at work. And it's good because he's home early, and we can watch stuff and cook dinner, but
then he has to go to bed early,
I also has to go to bed early and then be up at, like, stupid hours. And I try to bend my schedule around his, because if he needs to be up at, like, 2 in the morning, I can stay up. And so, because I normally go to bed a little bit later than he does, and so, like, all next week he's got changes from, like, Monday through Thursday, at least, where he's gonna have to be in, I think, Allen, like, 3 in the morning, and bullshit like that. So, needless to say, next week is going to be a whole bunch of not fun for him. So, at least I'm home, because, like, one of the things when I got home on Monday was basically playing catch-up. Like, I had 4 loads of laundry to do and all this other shit. That
yeah.
Go to the grocery store and be like, oh god, he doesn't have undershirts.
Because life gets put on hold con week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the week before, too.
So, I mean, again, I'm caught back up, and I feel pretty good about it, all things considered. I'm also feeling real good about not having to deal with it again in the future. All right, so we're going to go into the email segment of the show. We do have a few emails, because it has been, like,
a while
since we've actually hit the emails.
It's been a while.
I hit stuff dating back from, like, the middle of September.
No, we've been busy.
We've got 5 emails here. A couple of them we're going to, like, gloss over real quick, because they're quick answers, and one that'll probably spark some conversation. Alright, so, you can always email us, notcast@foxsurfers.com, send us anonymous questions at notcast.tumblr.com. If you just type in notcast.com, it takes you to our Tumblr, which hasn't been updated in a while, because we haven't put an episode in a while. We've been a little busy. You can send us anonymous questions there, and we'll just get right to it.
Let me hit this one. I'm going to read it, because it's about video games, and then you guys can answer it, because I don't know what the fuck this is about, so.
Okay.
Video game question. This comes via Tumblr. In Guild Wars 2, the new expansion just released great reviews. Is Saverin going to try it? Have any of you played Divinity Original Sin 2 yet? It's a great game, and you could solicit a gay lizard prostitute. Lizards being one of the races in the game, as well as cannibal elves.
I haven't played Guild Wars 2 beyond, like, the free trial, and I was like, eh, whatever. My current web game of choice is Warframe, and I have not played Divinity Original Sin 2. I've been very, very busy, and I am in the midst of playing Mario.
I guess it's a fairly new
game. Yeah. I mean, this was written in, like, late September, but
yeah.
I've been a little busy for the last month.
Right. Well, gay lizard prostitutes sound pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's also a game where you can be a skeleton man, where you have to wear a helmet at all times, and, like, because if you... Holy shit, you're a skeleton man. People freak the fuck out and try to kill you.
Uh-huh.
And, like, you have to do some extra role play where they're like, oh, this guy wants to shake your hand. Oh, why aren't you taking your gauntlet off? Oh, my hand is hurt. And if you do take your gauntlet off, like, wow, your hand is really...
bony.
Clammy and bony. Haha, don't mind me. It's just the weather. You know. By the way, I have the helmet on. Don't look under the helmet.
I'm kind of curious about Divinity. I actually found a random furry at work, and not the one I'd spoken about earlier.
Huh.
We were at one of our company gatherings, because they do one once a month, and they had one at end of September for whatever reason. Or no, beginning of October.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're doing our thing. They provide, you know, you get like a bottle of beer and snacks, and everybody has a good time. And there's this one guy I talked to a couple times. He's in a completely different department, so we cross paths very randomly. I looked at him, I tilted my head, walked up to him, said, excuse me, is that a Hyena Agenda shirt? He's like, why, yes, it is.
And it turns out, subtle furry hint there.
Yeah, so it turns out he's local, and we got to talking, and this is actually one of the games he recommended to me. And after talking it up a whole bunch, I'm actually really curious about playing it. Apparently it also has a co-op mode, so I'm interested in giving it a try.
Very cool.
This one's titled, Normal People Have Fetishes? Hey, Notcast. Mateus, long-eared critter from Colorado, writing in. You mentioned something in last week's episode that struck an odd chord with me. You see, a few months back, I joined FetLife. For those not familiar with it, it can best be described as the Facebook of hookups. You can post pics, join groups, watch your news feed, roll by, and spam people's walls with silly nonsense. I joined mostly because a friend got me to, that now I occasionally check in to like pics and even post on my own. Many of the groups on FL are dedicated to unique kinks. There are the old standbys of bondage and humiliation, but the list goes on and on. And as I scrolled through, I was struck by the amazing realization of just how many groups there are were for kinks. I'd always considered, quote, furry. Hypnosis has a surprisingly popular following, even outside the community, as does transformation. I always figured that TF was a gateway drug that led people straight into furry temptation, and it turns out normies can enjoy it too. There were non-furries devoted to everything from growth to size play to gender, TF to weight, muscle gain. Anal transformation wasn't the default, just another option to a broader fantasy. It certainly made my feet thump to realize transformation had a pretty strong normie following. The most surprising, but weirdly popular TF I found non-furries enjoying was one that made me a little uncomfortable. Racial transformation. There's a lot to unpack there, and it is an issue that Ungerboda, popular figure in the TF community, tackled pretty well in her most recent podcast. Suffice to say, I'm kind of glad it's one transformation that would be pretty hard for an anthropomorphic animal character to engage in. Mm. Well, I guess if Zootopia has taught me anything, you could learn a predator into prey, and then... Okay, stopping now before I accidentally write a fanfic. In any case, just wanted to write in and share my experience. I too have had the stunning realization that normies do some pretty kinky shit too. It makes their humble fandom feel just a little bit less weird. Ears perking in general direction, Mateus.
Yeah,
I think we may have discussed that with Jacoby, the Rachel transformation as a thing, but not on the podcast. I think we were just hanging out talking because we were at that bookstore.
Oh, Wild Detectives.
Wild Detectives.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had that conversation at the table and whatnot. In any event, yeah. Rachel TF probably deals with a whole bunch of stereotypes.
All right, next email. This is from D, asking if we got the bottle of Coke Zero from Canada. Yes, we have. Things have been really scattered, and they haven't been brought over yet. We will try and do that next week, yes, or the next time. I won't be on the show next week, so probably the week after that.
Bo gave me his slobbery,
sticky bowl.
Hairy. I don't have a good arm, so you throw. You probably have more distance. You have a doggo. You're used to, like, throwing
stuff. Yeah.
But he actually brought the ball. That's how he hit the point of boredom with him. He brought the ball.
He's like, all right, guys, you're not playing catch with me. Just bring me the ball, okay? Here's the ball. Take it. Throw it. All right. But yeah,
it's all goobery and nasty now.
Yeah.
The Coke Zero Sugar is still in its box next to my fridge at my apartment. I should have thought to bring it tonight.
Because I gave it to Saverin because I was like, you always bring the podcast gear, so... this should stay with you.
Just stick it in the podcast bag next when you get home.
Yep.
Oh, so it'd be me next.
Yes.
Sorry. Yeah. Let me put down the hose here.
The hookah hose.
Yeah. Okay. Archive that one. And, okay. So I'm going to read this one, Saren, and you know who this guy is, so you can talk about it. Stefan Molyneux's conversation on furries. Hello, I'm a long-time listener of Notcast and a first-time emailer. I'm curious what you think of this, the shocking furry fandom conversation. And he gives us a YouTube link. Stefan Molyneux is a popular figure. This video was posted a few hours ago and already has garnered the attention of thousands of viewers. I believe the content is best summarized by a caller who identifies as a furry at the 4850 mark. Quote, I feel like a lot of people in this fandom are fundamentally broken, even more so than the average population, because of the idea of inclusivity, the idea of acceptance that's just standard within this fandom, unquote. Stefan responds, quote, you haven't escaped your childhood, you're replicating. What fed you as a childhood is eating you as an adult. This is very common. The survival strategies as children destroy us as adults. Unquote. Stefan essentially suggests that participation in the furry fandom facilitates mental regress. By the end of the video, the caller states he intends to, quote, work towards recovery, unquote. What do you think of the issues discussed here? Is there any truth to the notion that participation in subcultures, particularly inclusive subcultures like the furry fandom, may stunt one's personal development in some capacity? Nathan Vulpix J.
So, no. And Stefan Molyneux is a alt-right douchebag who nobody should be paying any attention to. According to YouTube, he's a self-published author and speaks on topics like anarcho-capitalism, politics, race and intelligence, multiculturalism, right libertarianism, anti-feminism.
Wait, and race and intelligence is
race
one
and
thing,
intelligence
right?
is so one common
one
thing.
One of these fuckwits that's like, well, genetically other races are inferior.
Yes, so yeah. He is a alt-right white supremacist.
Fuck him.
So, fuck him, but the topic, he's trying, this is another one of those, inclusivity is bad.
Fuck him, but fuck yes to furry fandom.
But fuck yes to furry fandom, indeed. Basically, participating in fandoms is perfectly normal. Whether it's sports, whether it's anime, whether it's TV shows, all people participate in fandoms, and no one fandom is better than the other, and decrying a fandom for being inclusive is, again, the hallmark of right-wing douchebags like this fucker. Basically,
they're pretty much against inclusivity
yeah.
in any form. And this goes back to something we mentioned a couple weeks ago, where often, like, larger cities, where people are forced to live together, work together, with different walks of life, leads them to experience other cultures, it leads them to get exposed to other ways of thinking, it broadens their experience. So when you have an inclusivity like the furry fandom, you have the whole get along motherfuckers aspect. So you're forced to deal with not just your own, echo chamber, you get to deal with people who had vastly different life experiences than you. And you can learn about it from that standpoint. I mean, okay, you grew up in, like me, the Northeast, and you had one particular. And then you might run into people who grew up in the South, or grew up in an entirely different country. And now you have learned something about another place. You might not agree with it, you might not like it, but you've at least been exposed to it and got a chance to, potentially expand your worldview. Inclusivity broadens your experience in general, for good, for bad. It just gives you more data to work from. And it also forces you to learn how to deal with everything, from people you like to people you don't like to, you know, how to get along by, learning when to hold your tongue or when to stand up and, say, no, that's not right. And you kind of get this crossroads of all these different things. And two, when you deal with it like a fandom, a lot of people in the furry fandom were often had bad childhoods. They were nerds. They were outcasts. And then suddenly they have friends. They have people from all over that they can talk to and where they can, you know, form social circles that they lacked as in their childhood. And now, you know, they've found people, they've grown as people. You know, there's folks like me who have been in the fandom 20 years and now have friends from all over who have, you know, the furry fandom directly impacted a lot of my life experiences. It led me to meeting someone and I got married and I moved to Oz. And so I had years in Australia. You know, it led me to moving to Dallas. It led me to, you know, my employment indirectly.
Well, I'm not picking that up.
It led me to many of my employment opportunities through one tangent of or another. Like, the furry fandom has touched my life in so many different ways. It isn't just for meeting people in the fandom who, you know, the social circle of, oh, hey, there's a job opening. Let me submit your resume to my company. You know, hey, here's a neat person, and then suddenly I've got a good friend with that I hang out with a couple times a month or once a week, like you fuckers. You know, the fandom isn't just one thing. It's a social connection that lets you build bridges, that lets you travel, either mentally, because you're talking to someone and learning about, oh, this is what it's like out in San Francisco today, and this is a thing I did.
Yeah.
to going to San Francisco and, you know, seeing this, because you've gone out to, you know, FC or...
like 10 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the fandom can be a huge vehicle for change, for socializing, for learning that you're not alone, to friends that will get you through hard times. And yeah, there's the drama side that goes with it, too, but...
that's a human thing.
But that's a human thing. And it doesn't matter if the fandom is furry or if you're into the superhero group, so you go out to Comic-Con or you just like, you know, hopping on message boards and talking about the latest, you know, Superman, and you make friends, and then suddenly you got a D&D group that you're playing, you know, three nights a week over Skype.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fandom is just another social media, for lack of a better term. It's a connection between other people who enjoy the same thing as you, but then you discover other things you have in common.
Yeah.
And you have more than just that tangential connection to this person.
Right.
You know, it's just a vehicle for expanding your experiences one way or another. And that's my two cents.
Also, it's noted in this guy's Wikipedia article that he also apparently is a cult leader.
Mm.
That's fun.
Jeez.
So, you shouldn't be listening to this guy, author of this email. You should probably cut that out of your life real quick for your own sake.
Yeah.
Cults are bad, kids.
And I'd basically just agree with what Sheba laid out. I mean, the furry community has led to, like, every major development in my life. I found it when I was, like, 22, I think, and I was still, like, really shy and inward and stuff like that, and, you know, working retail jobs got me out of my shell in one regard of being able to just not be shy and nervous just talking to complete strangers, but the fandom is where I actually started making adult friends and forming a social circle around me and, you know, going to meets and hosting meets and creating things together, and, you know, it's just been a really great experience, and, you know, here we all are as adult, fully functioning members of society, holding down jobs, paying mortgages, having marriages. I mean, we're not failing to do anything else
because
adulting because we're furries. I mean, we're adulting as well as anybody else is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it hasn't, like, just because I think, like, a cartoon character is hot or something hasn't, like, that's just sexuality. That's everyone has a fucked up sexuality, right?
They all have their kinks, whether they like face them full on or if they're dirty little secrets.
Yeah.
Or maybe they don't even have a word for it, and they don't know that X thing is actually a kink and that there's more people like them. It's just what gets going in their head.
And there's, I can't remember what the context of this was. It was a convention that somebody had, like, gone to with someone that they knew, and it was the first time this other person had been to a convention, and they just saw their face light up, and it was like, I found my people, you know?
Well, how many of the hotel staff and that we've worked with through the years where they started looking at us really literally, and then by the time, it's like, you guys are great. We have a good time when you come into the hotel. You're better than, and you're easier to deal with than some of our business conventions.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And we, you know, they might not be phantoms, but they at least start to appreciate how much fun we just have.
Saverin.
And you just see us being social.
Sorry. I was going to say, Saverin, say what you told me about what the hotel staff said about working with Nightmare Nights.
Oh, yeah. I spoke with both the events director and the logistics director at the Crown Plaza, and they were both very sad that we were going because, like, our dudes are actually super well-behaved. Like, they didn't receive any complaints this weekend. We didn't break anything. Like, the hotel staff is really sad to see a super well-behaved group like mine go, because, man, you know, the bronies are cool and all, but don't watch out for those fucking CPAs. Those guys will tear up your hotel. God help you if the Baptists show up. They'll drink your bar dry.
And I saw a tweet from one of your staffers, and I won't name the group that came in the last day of Nightmare Nights and started setting up, but your staffer was talking about they were in the middle of, like, loading up the trucks, like, doing the breakdown and unloading all the stuff, and just the level of entitlement of all these business people that had come into this corporate conference was just astounding. Like, they were just really rude.
Yeah.
You know? While the Nightmare Nights crew was trying to load out all your equipment and everything.
Yeah, she told me she, like, eventually, like, there was a couple people who just refused to get out of the way, and so she just shoulder-checked them. And so, like, you know, if it's one of those, oh, well, if it's a chick doing it, she's just gonna, like, but no. This person in question, she's sturdy growl, and she just, all right, my dudes are coming down the way holding this 100-pound, 200-pound truss. You need to move. Excuse us. Hey. Boop.
Yeah.
Coming through.
Business groups can be, you know, like I said, entitled jerks.
Hey, and my dudes I make sure to pay, and I heard of this tale last year of a group that ran out on, like, a $10,000 bill from the hotel, which is really impressive when you consider, like, it was just people staying at the hotel and not renting event space.
Wow.
So, yeah, like, again, fandoms are good, and bullshit artists like Molyneux are only sucking the teat of YouTube for as long as they can until they get banned. Disregard them, that's it.
Have your fun.
Last email, because it's past 10 o'clock now, and this podcast in its raw form is almost 2 hours long before I edit it. Last email. An art question. I want to learn how to draw furry stuff, but I don't know where to start. Looking around, I see a lot of conflicting opinions among artists that have brought up the topic. I've seen suggestions to dive in, to start by looking at and copying artists you want to emulate, and to start by learning realistic drawing of humans and animals and merging them. It's befuddling. I'm passable looking at something two-dimensional and drawing it, given a lot of time and frustration, but my ability to draw from mental images is, well, depressing. I know this isn't something you guys talk about often, but I'm guessing you've seen this question asked and answered many times before. So looking back and registering the total lack of question marks in this email, my question is thus, when learning to draw furry art, where do you recommend beginning?
Ah, I can handle this one.
Ah, Shiva, yeah. A question you are definitely able to answer.
So the long and short of it is all of the above is perfectly valid. You can start by outright copying people. I wouldn't recommend posting those because they will get you in shit for tracing or for copying unless you give it, like, serious props about...
Proper attribution.
Yeah, proper attribution. Say that this, you know, I'm just trying to get my feet wet. I know that this is X. That is valid, but you are going to eventually want to develop your own style and your own look. That being said, that's where the whole learn how to draw humans, learn how to draw animals, and then try to find the place between the two where you think that's what dog people look like. That's what dog people fucking looks like, if that's where you're going to go with it. So I started out, and I don't draw that much anymore, I started out drawing superheroes and then drawing slightly animalistic superheroes, and then just full on just trying to figure out what I want my my dog people to look like. And that kind of goes back to finding your own style, is trying to get what you see in your head onto a piece of paper is probably the hardest fucking thing you will ever try to do. Because most of the artists I know, and I know quite a few, you know, even the best people, like Blotch, like Michelle Light, all trying to get out what they see is not the easiest thing. And half the time you start drawing and what you end up with is not what you originally started out with, but you're happy with it anyways. And sometimes it's just because the image in your head shifts, you know, as you're drawing. And sometimes it's the limit of your skill. And skill adjusts and changes and improves as you keep drawing. So D, all of the above, is the correct answer. Now, for particular skills, there are tons of tutorials out there on DeviantArt, from anything from how to draw eyes, how to draw hands, how to draw figure poses, and how to draw fur so it looks like, you know, real fur. Look at the tutorials. I have, like, a huge folder of nothing but tutorials that I have right-clicked and save image as, and I've collected these tutorials for reference later on. Build a portfolio of just, you know, animals that you want to. Like, you know, grab a whole bunch of German Shepherds, grab a whole bunch of wolves, foxes, you know, insert animal here, and just a whole bunch of stock photos where you can go, oh, okay, that's how a badger stripes go. And then when you draw a human form, practice how does a muzzle fit on like a human shaped head. Do you have to change the shape of the head slightly? Most likely. And then just practice how to kind of put all the pieces together in a pose. It's often you start out as just figure drawing, and then you layer on the muscles, you layer on the clothing or the fur, depending on what you're doing, or both. You know, how does a leather harness sit and the fur puff out around it? How do clothes hang off people? And sometimes it's just random sketching to build up, you know, little bits and pieces. And sometimes it's staring at other people's works and try to see how their underdrawing started and how all the components fit together and balance out. And from there, you start building. So yeah, copying is, you have to be really careful posting it. But for a private, you know, your own reference, go to town. You know, if nothing else, it'll help you teach you how to control the pencil or your Wacom or your tablet or whatever you're using it. There's no such thing as bad practice. The key is fucking draw, and then keep drawing. Yeah, keep drawing some more. You're not done.
My only contribution to this is I've seen artists I follow on like Tumblr be like, man, I took a couple days drawing and I had to like throw 3 sketches in the trash where I got something that looked good again. It's something that you have to do consistently or you'll get rusty.
And even sometimes when you're starting to draw, the first thing that you do is you just sit down and you do basic sketches. You start sitting down. It can take me a good while to just sit and random noodle out heads and torsos and poses. And I don't even finish anything. It's just kind of going through the motion of drawing, like, tutorial stuff helps kick my brain over into that headspace. Because it is a headspace that, you know, it takes time to get into. Or at least for me. Now, if you live in that, it can be easier, or you just never leave it. But, you know, it can take some working up to before you start drawing and have something that comes out. And sometimes one of those noodles will just be, oh, I'm going to keep going. And then suddenly I've done something fantastic. And I'm really actually happy with it because everything worked. So, that is how you draw. It doesn't matter if it's furry or anything else like that. It's that's universal for drawing.
Just do it!
And never, ever stop rocking!
Or writing. And, you know.
Yes.
Writing's the same. Any kind of creative process is kind of along that same line.
Yeah.
You know. You start. You scrap it. You start over. You rethink it. You start over again. You do a couple random things, and then something clicks, and you're going.
Speaking of which, best of luck to everyone who's attempting NaNoWriMo.
Oh,
this
God,
month.
Yeah.
Get your 50,000 words, if you can.
And also, Sparf is, and I know other people are doing this, but I particularly remember seeing Sparf's tweet about it. They're doing a write-a-thon for RAR with the Regional Anthropomorphic Writing Retreat, and that's something you can donate to helps kind of motivate him and also helps raise money for supporting RAR.
Funny thing about
NaNoWriMo
is that there was a funny mix of the two. So you've got Inktober, which is when all the artists just sit down and do ink drawing. So there's this vomit of creativeness in Inktober of just all this art. And then in November, all the writers go dead silent.
Yeah.
And then, and then at the end, it's, here's my thesis.
So is Inktober preceded by Sketchtember?
It has to be.
Sketchtember should be a thing.
That is nice. I like that idea.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Bo will glare at me because he's like, it's Sheptember.
No, it's Sneptember too. Don't forget that.
And it's October as well as Inktober. Foxtober.
Yeah. Sure, whatever, man. It's just November for all the porn. I don't know. Come on, guys. All right, so at this point, we have just now crossed 2 hours on this podcast, and I will have to be doing quite a bit of editing, but that's okay.
It'll be an hour.
And we apologize for the little dog barking in the background of some pieces. I have to find out what asshole neighbor that is and tell him to, hey.
And eat their dog.
That has not been Bo. It was yapping throughout
no.
the podcast.
If Bo was barking, we would be very, very
He has two barks. He has high-pitched puppy bark, and he has the big dog Shep bark, where it's like,
it's
whoa, 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 whoa,
to your left. He set it on the concrete and nosed it towards
you. I don't have the thrower thingy. It's like at your left, I think, Fuzz.
Oh, it's hanging up over there by the flim cutter.
So, yeah. Anywho, we should probably wrap up.
Yep, because it's past 10 o'clock and...
Don't look at me, Bo. I'm not touching that nasty ball. So you took it away.
All right, so you can email us, notcast@voxeffort.com, notcast.com takes you to our Tumblr. You can find me on Twitter at Saverin Drake.
We have a Telegram.
Yeah. I need to put that in the notes.
Oh, someone had left a note or a Tumblr or something about the...
The Discord
link, yeah.
I guess we haven't really been using it.
Yeah, I guess it's expired. It was on a pinned tweet or something.
Oh, yeah, that one's old.
Okay.
I'll have to fix that.
All right.
Haven't been using it because it's, again, a little bit busy.
Just a titch. So we got a Patreon, also Notcast.
Find all the Fuzz stuff where?
Oh, go to fuzzwolf.com. It's got links to my social media and also all the links to my various web stores and the Twitter accounts thereof. If you just want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at fuzzwolf on Twitter.
I communicate with, like, smoke signals.
Yes.
On Twitter, I'm Chimera, Khymaera. And same thing on Telegram. That's the main place you'll find me these days. Other than that, it's mostly in person. So,
on that note,
good night.
And big wells.